This is Jock Talk, an intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing. Presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who touched Derby, 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pravnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Barrage aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano.
A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now, here's Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I am retired jockey Christina McManigal, and I'm joining you from our Lexington, Kentucky studio. I would like to thank everyone listening tonight on Sirius 219, XM 206, and those listening to our website at horseracingradio.net. Now, a portion of the proceeds from this show go to benefit the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. The PDJF provides financial assistance to permanently disabled riders who have given everything to the sport. On average, 2 riders will become permanently disabled every year, so if you are able to help, please visit the website www.pdjf.org. And what a treat tonight. I am so excited to introduce this evening's guest. He's in the Hall of Fame. He's won 3 Kentucky Derbies in a 4-year span. He's won the Kentucky Oaks, the Preakness, the Haskell, the Woodward, just to mention a few of his victories aboard 2009 Horse of the Year, Rachel Alexandra. I'm sure you all know who I'm talking about by now. He has 5,146 wins and over $127 million in earnings and counting. Yes, he's back, ladies and gentlemen. An honor to introduce to you jockey Calvin Burrell. Calvin, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you very much. I really appreciate it. I am very happy you're doing this.
Well, we're happy to have you here with us tonight, Calvin. And let me just start off by saying you're back, and how does it feel to be back in the saddle again?
Awesome. Very awesome.
Awesome.
It's like riding a bike, you know, you never forget it. But under the circumstances, I'm very happy to be back where I am right now. You know, it wasn't a retirement. It was just more or less take a load off my back. You know, it was more or less of a family situation. And that's the reason I, you know, got away and just walked away and didn't do it in a good way, but I had to do what I had to do at the time. But all my people understand, you know, everybody, you know, nobody's perfect. It happens to all of us. But I'm so happy to be back and be on the racetrack with my people, you know, and it's unbelievable. I got to give Buck Bradley a lot of credit for, you know, wanting me to come back and ride. And, you know, he knew I was going through a little tough time, you know, because we're very close. It wasn't a tough time. It was just a situation where I can't say she was my wife. We wasn't married, but we were going through a little bit of problems the last couple of years, and I don't think I was performing like I should have been performing, and so the best thing to do was just walk away for a little while and come back a happy man and want to do it like I used to do it.
Well, I can tell you what, Calvin, we are all very happy that you're back, and you mentioned Buff Bradley. Didn't you ride your first horse back for him?
Yes, ma'am. I sure did. Yeah. He ran third. He ran a good race. We wasn't disappointed in what to mean. Now it's just, you know, getting more mounts, and we're getting a few more mounts. I got a new agent, Frankie Bernice. So he's going to start he took my book, and we most probably, like I'd say, next Saturday, really start cranking it up, you know, and riding more horses and go from there.
Go from there, Calvin. How does it feel like fitness-wise? How did you prepare for your return to the saddle as far as, you know, you weren't off for an extraordinarily long period of time, but
right. You
have to be very fit.
So I knew down deep in my heart I wasn't ready to retire, love. I mean, I got away, but I stayed fit, stayed, you know, working out, stayed doing the things I wanted to do and handling the business that I had to handle, you know, by in the right way. And, you know, so it wasn't that hard. You know, I went to New York and I was working for Coach, for Lucas. You know, not working for him, just getting on 6-7 horses a day for him. You know, he called me, said, just come here and get him some horses for me, get away for a while. And, you know, I was there like a month and a half, and I got on a bunch of horses every day. So I stayed fit, you know, and just got away a little bit, you know, just get on horses and, you know, just try to go on with my life and be happy. And I, you know, realized that I was ready to come back and ride, you know. And Lucky told me, he said, you're not ready to retire. You're far from it. So then I decided, you know, I called Buff and I give him a date. And I said, I'm going to talk to Frankie and we're going to set it up about the 27th. And I'd love to ride a couple for you. So we did. And now I'm back on, you know, back on track and happy as a lark. And I wouldn't trade it for the world.
Love it, Calvin. It definitely sounds like you mentioned happiness, and it sounds like happiness for you is on the back of a horse, and you're back where you belong. And Calvin, the way we usually do these shows, I would love to go back and take us back to the beginning, where you grew up and how it all started, and you were born and grew up in Louisiana, and we've had many riders on the show who've hailed from Louisiana as well, growing up and riding on the bush tracks, and you have a similar story. So take us back. Where did you grow up, Calvin?
Well, that's, you know, you're exactly right. I grew up in Louisiana, and I, you know, the family, everybody trained horses. When I first started, my dad had quarter horses, and my brother was riding at the time in Chicago. And actually, when he started really training, you know, we had like 40, 50 head of horses, and I was about, I'd say about 11, 12. And I moved in with him, you know, and I went to school until about the ninth grade. And then I quit and, then I started riding. And I got to give him a lot of credit. I was very fortunate to have a brother like him as a, you know, guidance. He means everything in the world, like a second dad. You know, he means everything in the world to me. And for me, you know, he helped me all along, you know, kept me straight, kept me away from drugs. And, you know, I was kind of scared of him. And, you know, he always told me, if I wanted to make it to the top, you know, you can't have one foot in, one foot out. You know, you have to put 110 of effort into it, you know, and I did, you know, and I work. And but I was fortunate enough to have him to have the horses, you know, to ride. When I first started, you know, it helped me a lot, you know, and it, you know, the word spread it out, and I started riding for, you know, everybody. And I was very fortunate to have a brother like him, you know, a good guidance, you know. I mean, it's just unbelievable. I see a lot of riders now, you know, that start and they do good for a while, but, you know, then they just go off the map. And and I know it's hard, you know. I mean, we make good money, we do good, and you know, you just think it never ends. But my brother had been there and done that, you know. He rode, was at the top and at the bottom, and you know, he always told me, he said, I'll never let that happen to you. You know, we're gonna take care of your money, we're gonna do it the right way, and you're gonna ride, you know, what you wanna ride for your 20, 25 years and be happy, and then you go to do what you want, you know. And I was very fortunate to have him. And really and truly, I had a good ex-girlfriend. She helped me a lot. You know, I can't fault her. And that's one of the reasons I quit for a while. You know, we had a place in Florida. She had jumping horses, and I got into the business a little bit. But it just wasn't, the racetrack. You know, a lot of, I mean, the racetrack's different. It's fast. It's it's more rewarding, and it's just, you know, it's a feeling that you never can get rid of, especially with what I accomplished in my life. You know, I mean, I go to if you go to the airport, people are always at, you know, they know you're a jock, but they always ask you if you rode the Derby. And when you can say you win the Derby 3 out of 4 years, that makes you very happy.
I would say so, Calvin. I would say so. To be able to say that, not very many people can say that. Actually, nobody else can say that. That's quite an accomplishment. And you say you were involved with the jumpers for a while, but obviously... Yeah. You have that need for speed, but did you enjoy that? Exactly. Did you enjoy?
I did. You know, we were in it for about 2 years. You know, before I retired, we got into it a little bit, and I, you know, was going back and forth and helping her, and you know, really, we did good. You know, we bought a couple of babies and we sold them, and then she started riding, and it was just totally different. You know, it was just. You know, it was just different, and it just didn't work. You know, it was I just couldn't see myself healthy and fit and not riding with my, you know, riding, doing something I love to do. And I'm not blaming her. You know, we always said, you know, that was the goal, to get away for a while and see how it would work. You know, and if it didn't, it didn't. If it did, it did. And it didn't. I mean, I got, after about, I'd say 3 months, I was getting depressed, and I did too good in my life to be depressed, you know, ma'am. I mean, I need to wake up in the morning, be happy and love what I do. I love to go to work and see my people, ride my horses. And, I guess I would say I just had really too much success, but you know, in this business, when you are doing good, you focus on riding. You know, you don't focus on nothing else. And it's like you have a set of blinkers on, and you know, that's all you want to do is ride. And you know, it's not an easy game. But I got to give her credit. She was behind me for the 15 years, so, and she pushed me and she helped me through a lot. So on the circumstance, you know, it was going away, but. It was going away good, you know, and I mean, so there's no hard feelings, and I'm back, I'm happy, and I'm doing good, so I can't complain.
Can't complain, Calvin. Everything's looking up, and let's go back talking about your brother and growing up with your brother, and he sounds like an excellent mentor to have, and he rode, you mentioned, for a time, and
right.
And why did he have to retire from riding?
Well, he really just got too big. You know, he rode 8 years, and he was reducing very, very hard. And so he decided to retire, and he picked up one good owner, Clifford Grum, and this very, very nice guy. I mean, he supported my brother all along for, you know, he'd keep him 15, 20 horses all the time. And we had a lot of success, too. You know, I mean, we did... We claimed horses for $20,000, $25,000 and win stakes with them. And we did real good together. You know, we were family, but we were very fortunate to do good, you know, together. I mean, and like I say, he was like a second dad. You know, he guided me in the right way and, you know, and made me save my money. And just, you know, it's like I just said, it's hard, you know, because we make a lot of money. But if you don't do it the right way, it's kind of a short career, what I'm trying to say. You know, it seems long, but 20 years goes by fast, you know. And if you can have the success I had, you know, you're supposed to be able to just chill out and lay back, you know. And right now I'm riding, but I'm happy and I'm chill, and I wouldn't change it for the world, you know. So, like I say, I love the backside. I love my people on the backside. They're all like my family, you know, and I'm doing good. So I can't wait to get really back to rolling, you know, and I think it'll take a couple of weeks, but I'm not worried at all.
Calvin, you mentioned your brother was like a second dad to you. Tell me about your parents and what they thought whenever you decided you wanted to pursue this as a career.
Well, what really happened, my mom and dad had me very late. You know, I come like 12 years after my brother, Cecil. And matter of fact, they actually got to see me win my first derby. And matter of fact, they passed away about, I would say, 6-7 months after that. You know, they passed away because my mom was like 47 when she had me. And they passed away. I think one was 84 and the other one was like 86. So, but they did get to see me win my first derby. And I was very blessed for that. And, you know, they were all about it. I mean, they knew what I wanted. I mean, I wasn't going to be a doctor or a lawyer. I just wanted to ride horses. And really and truly, you know, like my brother told him, you know, he's a natural. He has potentials, a lot of potentials. If I can just keep his head on his shoulder and just let, you know, guide him the right way like I want to guide him, you know, no telling how good he'll do. And because, you know, the work ethic was there. I mean, I didn't mind working. I'd get on 15, 20 a morning. It didn't matter. I mean, and ride 10 a day. But it didn't matter. That's all I wanted to do, you know. And he seen that. And he pushed me. He pushed me hard. But, you know, I wouldn't give it up for the world. I mean, I win 3 Kentucky Derbies. I went around the world. Got to go to the White House. I got to do things that, you know, it was incredible. I mean, for our job.
Calvin, it brings tears to my eyes to hear that your parents were able to watch you win your first derby, and that had to be just an incredibly, incredibly special moment. And you've obviously, you were raised the right way. You were taught to work hard. And I actually, Calvin, I heard a story that after your visit to the White House, you were mucking stalls the next day. Is that true?
Yep, we were coming back. You're exactly right.
Wow.
We flew back. Matter of fact, we had a private plane. They flew me back, and mucking stall, and I was working for him, you know, not working for him, but, you know, helping him run the barn and stuff. We were a good combination. I mean, you know, and the owner, I rode for him for like 26 years straight. And, you know, I knew that I always had a backup, you know, to ride. You know, I always was going to ride for them, you know, no matter what, good or bad. So, you know, like my brother told him, you know, he is going to ride no matter what. Nobody else will ride for us, you know. And that's how it started, you know. And like I say, he was hard on me, but it paid off. Like I said, I wouldn't change it for the world. And now I'm back, and I am so happy to be back. I'm doing good. Matter of fact, I even found me a girlfriend, and we're getting along good. So I'm very happy. I'm so very happy.
Life is good. Jockey Calvin Burrell joining me on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Calvin, I would love to pick your brain a little bit about the bush tracks. The idea of the bush tracks in Louisiana just fascinates me, and I've heard so many different stories. And now I want to hear your story and your experiences at the bush tracks. And how was that? When did you start riding at the bush tracks?
Oh, the bush track, I was riding when I was 8 years old in the bush tracks. I mean, serious. I mean, we'd run every Saturday and Sunday, you know. I mean, I'd ride from like 8 o'clock in the morning till like 12, and then we'd leave there and go to another bush track and ride from like 12 to 5 o'clock at night until it would get dark. And sometimes, actually, we'd run at dark, you know, because they put trucks and cars lined up on the fences and put some lights for us to run, you know. And actually, that made me a good rider. You know, I mean, they don't have that now. But like Eddie De La Russa, Kent Zamora, Shane Sellers, Rob Everardo, you know, that's where it come from. You know, I mean, we were broke. I mean, how would I say it? We, you know, when we got to the racetrack, we almost knew exactly how to do it and what to do it. and you know, you shine so much better. You know, when I rode my first horse, I knew where I had to be, and it was just so much experience. You know, it just incredible experience on the bush track. You know, you learn the hard way, and it makes you a good rider. You know, I mean, it makes you an aggressive rider. It makes you learn times, you know, on your horses, and you learn how, where to be, and, you know, how to save ground, and just unbelievable things, you know. And they don't have that now, and I believe that's why you don't see so many Louisiana riders coming up from there now. You know, it's they start, but, you know, they just vanish. You know, they'll start good, and then they never leave, though. I watch a lot of racing, and I see some very, very good young riders, but it's like they just vanish in the wind, you know, and it kind of cracks me up, you know. I don't understand it. I mean, but like I say, you know, they don't have bush track anymore, and they don't learn, how would I say, they don't learn the hard way. You know, they get to the big tracks, and they start doing good right away. And like I say, you know, believe me, in this business, you need a good guidance, a very good guidance. And that's one thing he was, you know, he was always there for me, good or bad. You know, it didn't matter. You know, it's just like, turn the page, tomorrow's another day, son. You know, let's worry about tomorrow, not today. It's over with. And I always kept that in my head, you know, and I become a good rider, and I got to ride for the most best people in the world, you know, best horses in the world. And I was very, very blessed.
Well, Kelvin, the stories going back to the bush tracks, you mentioned you had to be aggressive, and the stories that I've heard, there are pretty much no rules. There weren't stewards, you know, watching over the races
right.
You know, there is today. So right. I'm sure you came through some experiences I can't even imagine. You know, when there's no rules, what goes on? You know, and you have any interesting, maybe somewhat frightening stories to share with us?
Oh, well, I mean, you know, really and truly, in the bush tracks, if you broke in front, you stayed in front. You would not let a horse pass you. I mean, it was all about the break, you know. You know, you would never let a horse get by you. You'd run him over the fence, or you did what you had to do to win. I mean, there was no stewards, you know, and the people, what they do, they bet against one another, and it's, you know, it's called just, you know, head up. You know, we'd run two horses at a time, and sometimes, hell, I rode races where we would only run 36 feet. I mean, two jumps out of the gate. And you know, it would try to get the best rider that could be, you know, good on a horse. And I was very, very good, you know. And you would not imagine all the things we did. I rode horses against, the other horse had the chicken on it, and I was on one. And, you know, it was to outbreak him and get in front of him and just, you know, hurt him or something, you know. And it was tough, believe you. It was fun, but it was tough. It made you tough, you know. It made you aggressive, made you ride a good race, you know, and pay attention and put your horse where you needed to be. And it made you a good rider. I mean, it was incredible.
Kelvin, I can't imagine being 8 years old and doing that. I mean, I don't know what I was doing when I was 8 years old, but it was certainly nothing like that. But question for you, is that where you learned the valuable talent that you have of saving ground and coming up the rail? Is that where it started? Or?
Yes, ma'am, that's where it started. You know, my brother always told me that, you know, and you know what the bad thing about it, it was like this half a mile bull ring, you know, you had, you know, to go around the corners. And, you know, he'd always tell me that, you know, cut the corners, son. You know, just please stay on the fence. Don't, you know, let the race develop in front of you and stay on the fence. Something's going to happen, you know. And he was always right about it, too. And I kind of carried it to the big tracks, you know. And I couldn't ride as aggressive. You know, I knew the rules. But, just by saving ground. You know, I win so many races by saving ground and not going around horses and stuff like that. You know, I mean, I think out of maybe the four derbies I rode, I might have went around five horses. And you know, I'm talking about 20 horse fields. So, and that had a lot to do with it.
All right, Calvin, so we've talked about your experience at the Busch Tracks and everything you've learned from your brother. And I want to go back to the Stephen Foster in 2006 when you really kind of burst onto the scene with 91-1 long shot Seek Gold. And tell me about that race.
Hey, it was unbelievable. Let's see. That was Ron Moquette. We got a horse. He bought this horse from New York, and we got him, and we started working him. And actually, the horse was working good. You know, he had been had a bad form, and you're exactly right. That's what really started my career. I mean, started, you know, riding good horses and stuff. And that day there, when I went that race, from there on, it was amazing. I mean, it's like I just couldn't do nothing wrong. I mean, it was. Yeah, I got to give Ron a lot of credit there, too. He put me on this horse, and he was 90-1 and or 50-1, whatever the hell. And he won that day. And ever since then, you know, it kind of started my career. You know, people kind of opened their eyes, you know, and seen, you know, that, you know, I had the talent to do as good as the guys that were here at the time, you know, Pat Day. And, you know, I mean, all of them guys, and they had a lot of good riders at that time, Chris Karen and all of them. And it was tough. You didn't have too many Bug Boys, but very, very good riders, you know, and that put me on the map. You're exactly right.
Well, I would think that would catch a lot of people's attention whenever he pays $185 to win. That would do it. That would do it. And Calvin, you have a reputation for doing that, lighting up the tow board.
Yes, ma'am. I tell you what, you know, long shots. There's a reason the horses in the big races, you know, they did something good along the line, you know. It was just like Mind That Bird, you know. I went back to, like, his Breeders' Cup races when he was running in, I want to say, Woodbine. And I watched him run as a two-year-old. And, you know, he was coming from so far back and winning, and it's like they kind of changed his style and trying to put him into the race, and he was running second or third, and Chip Hurley wind up buying his coat. And when, you know, he bought him here, he told me, you know, he said, Calvin, he said, hey, you know, I didn't want to be that far back, but he said, I want this horse last, he said, and make me one run. That's all I want you to do, he said, and I promise you. And I've been on the coat, you know, like three times, and the work wasn't spectacular, but it was the after the work. You know, I let him gallop out another 3/8 of a mile, and boy, he picked it up so purity and beautiful, and just like a Derby horse, you know, to finish. And he shouldn't have been no 50-1, believe me, running to the race, because the coat, I mean, it wasn't a fluke, you know, because I believe I win the Derby on him, but when he run in the Preakness and run second to me, I always said that he run a better race that day when Mike Smith rode him when he run second to Rachel. You know, I mean, that was, you know, it was just a thing I had to do. I thought she was, you know, one of the best horses. I know she was the best horse I've ever been on. And it was hard, but, you know, we go through a lot of things people don't realize, you know, take off a Derby horse to ride a filly. I had to do a lot of things in my career to be where I am.
I can't imagine how hard that decision must have been. God. And Calvin, we're going to talk about that after this quick commercial break. Stay with us.
Right.
You're listening to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, Hi, I'm Tito Beverage, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Being a jockey may be one of the more dangerous professions in all of sports. In a split second, you can go from the top of the standings to never being able to stand again. I'm Mike Pena, and over the years, I've had the privilege of talking with many of the top jockeys in thoroughbred racing. And to a person, they will tell you that on any given day, before any given race, when they get a leg up, there's no guarantee they'll return the way they left. It's simply the reality of being a jockey. The Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund does amazing work, providing financial assistance to some 60 former jockeys who have suffered catastrophic on-track injuries. Since its founding 10 years ago, the PDJF has disbursed over $7 million to permanently disabled jockeys. And I'm proud to say that the PDJF is the official charity of the Horse Racing Radio Network, but the only way they can continue helping those disabled riders who have given our sport so much is through your generosity and support. So I encourage you to visit pdjf.org and start making a difference today.
You can make money at the track this summer. Some of the best thoroughbred racing of the year is on tap at Saratoga, Del Mar, Arlington Park, Monmouth Park, and Woodbine. So the opportunities abound. With insightful handicapping, inside information, and worthwhile wagers at all your favorite resort tracks. Racing fans from coast to coast use PopeJude.com's reports every weekend as another set of eyes on the past performances to affirm their own choices or consider a horse they may have dismissed. You can make money at the track this summer. Go to PopeJude.com to learn more. That's PopeJude.com.
This is CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 weekly update. John McKee had a solid week as he won 47% and finished in the money on 71% of his mounts. McKee finished the week with 8 wins, 2 seconds, and 2 third place finishes at Belterra Park. Javier Castellano won 2 Grade 1 stakes races on Saturday and 4 overnight races on Sunday at Saratoga, which helped him lead North American earnings for the week. Castellano finished the week with 9 wins, 7 seconds, and 5 third place finishes. Diego Sainz had a great closing week at Evangeline as he won 3 races each on Friday and Saturday. Sainz won 43% of his mounts and finished the week with 10 wins, 4 seconds, and 1 third place finish. Finally, the Jockeys Guild Jockey of the Week, Mike Smith, showed how he earned the nickname Big Money Mike. Smith shipped into Saratoga and started off by winning the Grade 1 King's Bishop, or Drayfrong. The New Mexico native finished his day with one of the more impressive performances of the year aboard Arrogate in the Traverse. The Hall of Fame rider guided Arrogate straight to the lead and never looked back as he set the track record with a 13.5 length victory. Smith finished the week with 2 wins, 2 seconds, and 4 third place finishes. Ride to Win, an inside look at the jockey's craft, explores everything that goes into winning a race from the rider's perspective. Written by award-winning turf riders Bob Portis and Gary West, the book explores how jockeys land mounts, how they plan strategy, and what they are thinking and doing as a race unfolds. The book answers those questions and many more. A significant portion of the proceeds go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. For excerpts, testimonials, and to order, visit JockeyTalk360.com. This has been CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 weekly update. For all the latest news in the jockey world, visit JockeyTalk360.com and follow us on Twitter at JockeyTalk.
You're listening to Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
And now Rachel Alexander's opening up. 5 lengths on the field. 6. Oh, a tour de force by the super filly, Rachel Alexander. Kevin Burrell isn't moving a muscle on her. She's going to destroy this field. Oh, super filly, you bet. What's the final margin? She might have won by 20. Rachel Alexander was absolutely spectacular in 1 minute 48 and 4/5 seconds. Stone Legacy was well beaten in second, and finishing third there was Flying Spur. Unbelievable.
Unbelievable. Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. I am Christina McManigal. And I'm joined tonight by jockey Calvin Burrell. Calvin, that replay gives me goosebumps. I can't imagine what it does to you.
Unbelievable, yeah. She was so good then. You know, she was incredible. That was, you know, we I was set for the Oaks that year. You know, I said, there's no way, you know, I mean, they all get beat, but she was doing so good that day and that week. And, oh, my God, it was just a pleasure to ride her. I mean, God, when I sat on her the first time, she was an incredible horse. I knew she was just unbelievable, you know. And I, matter of fact, that's the same year Bird win. And I really didn't think it was going to be a convict, you know, because the owner, that previous owner, always told me, you know, he said, don't worry, we'll never run against the boys, you know. And Mr. Jackson stepped up and bought her, and I'll never forget that. And I called Steve, and I said, Steve, don't worry about nothing. I know I win the Derby today, but I will ride the filly. I mean, don't worry. He said, are you serious? I said, I'm serious. and he said, okay. He said, well, I'll talk to Mr. Jackson. And he said, I don't think it's going to be no problem. You know, you're 9-for-9 on it. I can't see him taking you off of her. and I'll never forget that. Oh, my God. I was stressed out for 2 days, I tell you what, until I got in touch with Mr. Jackson. And he said, oh, no. He said, Calvin, as long as you want to ride her, she's your horse. I mean, you know, you had too much success with her. And I was very blessed for him to keep me on the filly and keep going with her, you know, and just riding her and through her whole career, you know. We did, you know, she kind of, I mean, she made me. She put me on top of the map. And I she was just an incredible horse, you know. She was so, oh, my God, she was something else. God.
Calvin, I can't imagine. Not many people are faced with the choice of either riding the Oaks winner or the Derby winner, and then I can't imagine what kind of...
Yeah, I'll tell you what. In a two-day spirit, I had to make a decision. And let me tell you what. I did not sleep.
I wouldn't think so.
Oh, my God.
No.
Lord.
What did what did Chip Woolley say when you spoke with him?
Well, he kind of... It was heads up, you know. He knew up front. My agent took care of it up front, you know. He said, Chip, we're going to ride your colt, you know, and not dreaming that just, you know, yes, we were trying to win, but, you know, whoever, you know, he had just come off of a running fourth in the British Cup and wasn't a, you know, bad fourth, but like I told my agent, you know, I'm going to go out there and ride him like it's his two-year-old campaign. And I think he's a better horse, you know, just taking him back and making that 3/8 of a mile run. I mean, and actually we were on the same page, me and Chip Woolley, you know, to really get him back and make a run with him. And it paid off, you know. It made the colt develop to be what he was after that, you know.
That was the most incredible ride I think I've ever seen in the Derby that year.
Just thank you.
Coming up the rail. Tom Durkin didn't even know what happened. No one did. Just came out of nowhere up the rail. And that was just, gosh.
Terrible, yes. Yeah, he ran a good race. But like I say, he wasn't a fluke, you know, because when he come back and run second in the Preakness to Rachel, I was so happy he did that, you know, to, you know, just show the people that it wasn't a fluke, you know. It just wasn't a overnight thing that he jumped up and run a big race. He was a nice colt, believe what I'm telling you. He was a nice, nice horse.
Calvin, turning for home in the Preakness, did you know that was mine, that bird coming, flying close?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I knew it was him. When I looked under my arm, I said, well, you know, it's a shorter distance. Mm-hmm. And most probably one of the reasons I really rode the filly, because I knew she could get a mile and 5/16 easy, you know. And that was her cup of tea, you know, mile and 16th to mile and 5/16. And then after that, you know, she had enough, you know. She did win going a mile and 1/8, but we grinded that day. It took a lot out of her that day. But she did win, though. She laid it down for me. And, you know, a mile and 1/4 is a big difference. It makes a big, big difference, you know, in racing. And that colt, he just loved it, though. He loved to go mile and 1/2, mile and 1/4, you know. He, oh, my God. Now, I thought her best lick was a mile and 1/16, you know.
Well, she had that natural speed as well. And
exactly, and right. You know, she was just a very, very high cruising filly, and I would never take nothing away from her. You know, it didn't, as fast as she wanted to go, I let her do it. You know, I mean, because I knew going a mile and 16, there was no horse to finish with her, you know, because she would just keep giving you, you know, 12s and a quarter, 13, just unbelievable.
What was the secret to riding her, Calvin? You two clicked.
She was a little quirky, you know. I mean, her mom was the same way. Her mom, I rode her mom, she win, and then her mom come back and run in the stake and win, and I was going to work her one morning, and she flipped on the blacktop in New Orleans and broke her back, and she never got to run again.
Wow.
And Rachel Alexander was the first baby that she ever had, and Rachel was good, you know, but she had a lot of quirks, you know. You could not make her do something she did not want to do. You know, I rode her. I left her alone all the time. I would never, you know, if she wanted to be on the lead, I'd let her do it. If she wanted to lay second or third, I'd let her do it, because she was a little quirky. You know, she was like a little temperamental, you know. But as long as I left her alone, it was fine. She'd do her thing. You know, she'd go out there in the morning and work so fast. Oh, my God. I had a lot of people tell me, Calvin, that's too fast. But I would never take it away from her, because she'd get upset. You know, she'd get mad, boy. And I tell you what, she didn't like it. She loved to run. That was her cup of tea. Just let me run, and I'm going to do my thing.
Typical filly, right? Let me do what I want to do. Leave me alone.
Exactly. Imagine that.
Imagine that. Wow. Well, and you know, you knew what she wanted, and
yeah.
First filly to win the Preakness in 85 years. That was, I mean, she made history every single time.
Exactly. She made history there, you know, and that's what Mr. Jackson wanted. You know, I mean, we put it to the test. You know, I got to give him a lot of credit. He stood up and run against the old horses, three-year-old coach, you know, but she never let us down. She was always there for me. When I wanted some more, she would give it to me. I mean, she was the most incredible horse I've ever been on. Believe what I'm telling you. God bless America. God.
So I would guess that she's definitely your favorite.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah. She's my favorite. I go see her every now and then. And
really?
It's a shame. She only had two babies, and then she liked to die the second time she had a baby. So Miss Jackson didn't like it too much. So I'm not saying she'll never have another baby, you know, but I don't know if she'll put her in that position to, you know, to breed her again. But maybe one day. Matter of fact, when she was in the Hall of Fame last 2 weeks ago, I talked to her, and she said she's doing so good, you know. She said, you know, I'm not saying I'm going to, but it's tempting, you know. But I mean, it's up to her, you know. Yeah. It's her horse, but she's such a beautiful, beautiful mare, and you know, she accomplished so much for these people, and they know it, you know, and they're good people. They'll do right by her, believe what I'm telling.
Well, and she did find success as a brood mare, of course.
Yeah.
Rachel's Valentina, you know, and Jess's Dream, of course.
Exactly.
Very successful.
And that's the only two, you know. That's the only thing. I wish she could have threw a few more, you know, and see exactly how good she was, you know, as a broodmare. But like Miss Jackson said, it's not over yet. You know, she's going to give her time, a couple more years, and see what happens, see what the doctors say. And you never know, like she said. You know, I mean, that's up to her. It's her horse, and so we might see another one. Maybe one day we will. I hope we do.
That would be a treat, definitely, Calvin. Jockey Calvin Burrell joining me on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Calvin, I would like to mention something. Going back to Mind That Bird, last night I had never seen the movie 50 to 1, and I missed it in theaters. I decided, do you know what? I need to ask Calvin about how it was, you know, his debut as an actor. And I watched the movie last night. I was very impressed, Calvin. I was very impressed.
Thank you. It was fun. I got away. You know, I took off the summer, and I got away. And I don't think I'd want to do it again. But I can't say that. I had a lot of fun. I mean, I went places, and it's very slow. I'd work, do it all day long, and we'd go back in the afternoon, and we had maybe 2 minutes of peak. I said, oh, God, this is all we did all day? And the guy said, yes, because, you know, it's been going on for 2 years. I mean, and I said, oh, my God. So when I took off the summer, I'd give him 5 days a week, 5 days every day from my time. And every afternoon we'd sit down and watch, and maybe we got like 3 minutes. I said, oh, God. I said, oh, my God. I see why actors get paid a lot of money. I can tell you now. Oh, Lord. But it was fun. I had a good time doing it. I'll tell you what, I wouldn't change it for the world. I mean, it was so much fun being with the actors, you know, and we had a good time. And I did all right. You know, we did good.
It was a very good movie, Calvin, but if it was slow, well, you like to go fast, so that wouldn't work out too well.
Yeah, it was, oh, God. The first day, I'll never forget that, when we come home, and I was watching, the thing, and they only had about 3 minutes of it. I said, damn, since 5 o'clock this morning, that's all we did? I said, Jesus Christ.
Wow.
So after 2 years, they finally put it together, you know, and it was pretty good. It came out pretty good.
That
I was very impressed.
It was good. It was good, Calvin. That was
I appreciate that.
It had to be a different, cool experience to be able to say
it
that.
It was a different atmosphere, I can tell you that.
A little different than the racetrack, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Calvin, I want to talk about, we mentioned earlier, your first Derby you won, and your parents were there. They were able to watch you win your first Derby. Let's talk about that first Derby. Yeah. 2007.
Okay. Street Chance, like I say, I'll never forget, I come home and I told my fiance, if I'm going to win the Derby, it was going to be him. You know, he was the horse to do it. You know, Carl, I worked him from his first quarter of a mile to all his races, Mr. Carl told me, I'll never forget when I got on him, he said, if he's the horse I think he is, son, he said, he's your horse. I'll never take you off of him. You ride him the way you want. You know, he loved to come from behind. And, we didn't win every time. But when when Mr. Carl had him ready for the, Breeders' Cup, the Derby, the Tampa Bay Derby, he was the kind of horse Mr. Carl would get him ready for the big races, And when he was right, he showed up, I believe Mr. Carl would just set him up, and get him ready for the big races, and we won. We won our races. Matter of fact, the day I got beat in Lexington, when I run second right before the Derby, and I'll never forget, he come back. Now, he said, don't you lose confidence in this horse now. He said, you go out there and you ride this horse like you know how to ride. He said, we run second today, but don't worry about it, okay? So, and Street Sense, Mr. Carl had his key, and when Mr. Carl wanted him to win, he showed up. The horse showed up. I got to give a lot of credit to Mr. Carl. He did so good with this horse. He was a big colt, had a little bit of issues, but he kept him going, and pointed him in the right directions. When I got beaten the Preakness, and I was so upset, and he said, no, I said, don't worry about it, Calvin. It happened for a reason. He said, we'll take him, and we'll win the Travis. That's one race I want to win. So, sure, hell, we took him to Saratoga, and we win the, as a matter of fact, I win the Alabama on the Philly farm, and 2 weeks later, win the Travis on him. And then, then we took him to the Breeders' Cup, and he wasn't himself, but we took him, and he ran, I think, fourth that day, and I think that was his last race.
Calvin, I read a quote from Carl Nafsker, the trainer, of course, of Street Sense. He said, Street Sense loved him, referring to yourself. If he had asked Street Sense to run through a brick wall, Street Sense would have hit the brick wall. That made me laugh.
I put him in spots, ma'am, you would not imagine. And I put him in the worst of spots, and it was like, well, if that's where you want me to be, that's where we're going. And he'd go through horses or go on the fence. It didn't matter. When I wanted street sense there, he was always there for me. He wasn't a horse that would hesitate and you had to worry, you know. He was a horse, when I squeezed on him, he'd put me in the hole so fast. It was incredible. That's one thing good about, that's what makes a racehorse. You know, a jock can ride a good horse, but when you ride one like him and you trust him so much, you know, to put him in a spot that you know you're not supposed to be there, but when I'm going to put street sense in there, he's going to get me out. Don't worry about it. And that was, I rode this horse with so much, it didn't matter. I rode him with so much confidence. I mean, he could get left at the gate. He could, it didn't matter, you know. He was just telling me, don't worry about it. This is chilly. And more or less like him, you know, I let him do his thing. And I blame you, I put him in so many bad spots, but he got me out of them every trip. He was a good horse. Believe what I'm telling you. He was all heart. He was, yeah. I mean, nothing but heart. When, oh, my God, I would always say sometimes I'd ride him bad, you know, but he'd win, you know, and because I'd ask him to do a lot, you know. I mean, after he started winning, you know, the jocks started watching him, and, you know, they make it tight on him, you know, but he loved it. He loved it. I mean, I'd put him in between horses, and I mean, tight, very tight. Mm-hmm. And he'd get me through them holes so quick, it was like, God bless America. And I'll never forget when I rode him in the biggest cup, the 2-year-old. God, when I turned for home, you know, and they had a little bit of hole, and I said, oh, I call him Daddy Rabbit, you know. He had some big long ears. I said, Daddy Rabbit, this is going to be tight. And he jumped, he had me through that hole, and that turn for home, he was 6-7 in front already. I believe that was one of his most incredible races he ever run in his life. It was the biggest cup. 2-year-old.
Wow. And Calvin, you had to have nerves of steel to even ask that, to go through those spots.
You know, when you ride them kind, it gives you the nerves. It didn't matter. I knew that I trusted him so much. He trusted me. I would never ask him to do something I shouldn't ask him, you know, wouldn't ask him. And believe me, you know, I did sometimes. But he trusted me so much. Like Mr. Carr said, I could put a wall to him. And I told him we had to go, he'd go. I mean, that's how he was. He was made of stone, this horse. I mean, God, he was an awesome horse to ride, you know. Yeah. He would never let me down. He never let me down. I mean, I'd go between horses. I'd get through on the fence. Nothing would bother him, you know. He was an incredible horse at a race-wise, you know. I mean, the kind of horse you'd want to go to the Derby with, I can tell you that.
Well, he showed up Derby Day, didn't he?
Yes, ma'am, he did.
Calvin, let's talk about your most recent Derby victory.
Yeah. And the last one, Super Favor. You know, I rode a good race, and I was very fortunate to win for Todd Fletcher, you know, his first Derby. And we, you know, it's just like him. I got to give Todd good judgment. We took him to Hot Springs, and I went on him before, but we wanted to get him back that day. So he called me up and told me to take him back a little bit, and he runs second at, in the Arkansas Derby. And, you know, he said, that's fine. Don't worry about it. I was very happy. He said, at least we have something to finish with, you know. And most probably that's the race that made him win the Derby, you know. He made me take him back that day and, you know, teach him a little bit more, because we knew we couldn't be in front in the Derby every jump of the way, you know. So, and I took him back that day. He finished. Yes, I got beat a nose, but it was a stepping stone for the Derby. And matter of fact, the Derby, you know, he broke. I laid 6-6, and it was just perfect, you know, just the way we wanted. And got through, and he was a nice little horse. I mean, I tell you what, he is throwing some super, super babies. Incredible. I can't wait to ride some of them.
Calvin, I got to say, that had to be a huge day for Todd Pletcher and the Connections. You know, they got the monkey off their back that day.
Yes, ma'am. It was. I mean, he always thanks me about that. I mean, every time I see him, you know, and I ride a few horses for him here and there, you know. I'm not his go-to jog, but I still ride a few horses for him. So But I was very blessed to do that for him, and I know to this day he is too.
I got to tell you, Calvin, I actually used to gallop for Pletcher, and I sat on the back of Super Saver a time or two, and I was definitely cheering for you in the Derby. And what kind of a horse was he to ride?
He actually wasn't a bad horse to ride. You know, he was just a little aggressive early in the race. But the first, when I first won a few races on him, we always had him on the lead. And then, you know, he was a little aggressive. That's the only... His pet peeve was to try to get him to relax, you know. And in the Derby, I got him to break sharp, and I got on the fence, and he turned off. Matter of fact, he relaxed good the first three quarters of a mile. And then from there on, though, I had a lot of horse, you know, and he took me home. I mean, it was a hard ride. I had to ride him real hard to get there, but he did.
Calvin, you mentioned that Rachel Alexander, of course, is your favorite, but which was your favorite Derby victory?
Well, Street Dance was my favorite. You know, the first.
Of course.
That's one they can never take away from you. And, you know, Mind That Bird was just bobbling. I mean, it was just unbelievable. I most probably got more excited by winning on Mind That Bird, you know, just because, you know, nobody thought he had a chance and stuff like that. But, you know, the first one, Love, oh, my God, that's the best feeling. I mean, you just go blank. You don't, I mean, you have 100,000 people. You don't hear nothing. It's the most incredible feeling. Oh, my God. You would not imagine.
I can't even imagine, Calvin. I can't.
Oh, my God.
That's incredible. That's incredible. And jockey Calvin Burrell is joining me on Jock Talk tonight, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Calvin, I can't believe this hour is flying by.
Yeah,
I just looked at the clock. Like I said, we could talk for probably five hours. But let me ask you about the 2013 Hall of Fame ceremony. You were inducted into the Hall of Fame that year, and that had to be just an incredible experience to look back on all of your accomplishments and to be honored for such. What were you feeling that day?
Oh, Lord, I wasn't feeling nothing that day. I come back and realized what I did, you know, and sat down and thought about it. Then I started to realize, you know, it was very accomplished, man. I mean, it was just unbelievable. Couldn't believe I did it, you know, and to, you know, when you get there, you did it all. You know, I mean, it's accomplished that every jock, you know, dreams. It's just like winning the Derby. It's a dream come true, you know. I actually got to pinch myself every morning, you know, because I was very fortunate to get there, you know. And I got to thank all people, you know, all my owners and trainers for helping me, my brother. And, you know, it's just there. But, you know, I put a lot of hours into it, but it's not an overnight thing, believe me.
Calvin, so much you've accomplished. Let me ask you this. What goals do you still have that you are aiming for? What would you still like to accomplish in your
My
career?
Goals right now, love, is just to ride and be happy. And like I said, I have a girlfriend now, make her happy, and live my life the way I was before. No matter, you know, I want to find good horses to ride, but it's for a ride. That's it. And I'm fly right now riding, so you can't take that away from me. And that's my thing right now. I love to ride. I love to win. And as long as I stay healthy, keep riding, be happy, as happy as I am right now, I can't take it away.
Calvin, that's a great goal to have, to ride, to live, to be happy. Quick question for you. We are almost out of time. Okay. Are you going to be down at Kentucky Downs this year?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'll be, back and forth, but I'll be there.
All right. I'm going to have to come down there for a couple races. And
yeah, sure.
I'll have to say hello. And Calvin, let me tell you, it has been an honor and a pleasure to have you here on the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you
so much. Calvin.
Yes, ma'am. God bless you, and thank you, love.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Wishing you all the best. To Calvin Burrell coming back. He is back, ladies and gentlemen. Now, if you missed any portion of tonight's show, you can check out our website, horseracingradio.net, and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. Don't forget, we are now on Sirius 219, XM 206, where you will find us next Tuesday at 6 o'clock Eastern Time with another edition of Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. For our producer, Lee Delapina, I'm Christina McManigal. Thanks for listening.